This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to Not Without My Sister, fresh off the Everyday Feb roller coaster. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Beatrice, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much did you enjoy doing Everyday Feb?
I actually really enjoyed it. It gave me lots of reasons to hang out with you, although I felt like most of our conversations were like, stop talking. That's a great topic for a podcast.
I do feel like we're kind of slipping down that slippery slope towards like everything is content. When I texted you yesterday, I said, well, I come over tomorrow and watch Poor Things. It's on Hulu now. And you were like, yeah, and do an episode about it on Monday. And I was like, no, I just meant to just watch a movie, just hang out, watch a movie, not talk about it.
Well, when you're trying to do 5 episodes a week, like, you have to have
content. Yeah, you really have to mine everything for content.
Yeah, because like if we were Liveline, which is always my example, you know, if we were Marion, like, she'd have researchers saying, today you're going to talk about X. And I'm sure like a lot of it was, I'm sure it was directed by her. I'd like, these are the topics I'd like to talk about. But instead we're like, what are we going to talk about? Because when you're doing 5 episodes a day and you don't have any researchers preparing any information for you, everything is your own research, like you're living and mining your life.
That actually life should be a goal. Remember, we were talking about adding goals to our Patreon. So maybe when we get to, what would I say, $20,000 a month, we'll hire a researcher so we never run out of topics.
I'd honestly love that. I think it
would,
would
be
add,
great. Yeah,
I think,
yeah.
Are you serious? I think it would add a lot of depth to, because we could have, you know, we could have slightly more informed conversations about like, would you implant a chip in your brain with maybe a lot more research than we can cram in the 30 minutes preceding. You know, and Google reliant, as we know, as I now know, being tricked by Jeremy Allen White and his non-grandfather.
It wasn't his fault that some site wrote a piece about like celebrity grandparents.
Yeah, but you can't believe everything you read on the internet was my point. Like your researcher would be saying, this is not accurate. What you're about to say is a falsehood.
Well, the researcher would have to be in the room with us for every single recording then to go, Beatrice, no.
What? Of course.
And for this month, we're going to be doing 2 episodes on the main feed each week and 2 episodes on Patreon. So if you'd like to get 4 episodes a week into your ears and on Patreon as well, you can plug the RSS feed into your podcast player and you just get the episodes the same way you would any other podcast. So you don't need to go into Patreon, don't need to use the app, don't need to go to the website. You can sign up at patreon.com/notwithoutmysister and you'll get basically everything. And you'll also get access to our book club where now once a month we're doing a live Zoom. We just did the first one for... Oh, why do I always
Lisa
think her
Jules.
Name is... Yeah, I always think her Lisa. Name is Jessie Ware, even though I know that's a singer. Lisa Jules, none of this is true. We just did that on the Patreon. We had a great time. We'll be doing another live Zoom book club at the end of this month for March's book. We'd love you to join us. And that's patreon.com/notwithoutmysister.
Not without my sister.
And this week, we thought we would give you actually a little taster of what we usually do on the Patreon. And we thought we would answer some reader questions we've been sent in over the years. No, we've been sent in over the last couple of weeks. Beatrice, would you like to share your main gripe?
Oh, yeah. My main gripe is honestly that, like, when you send things in, when we receive messages, now, this is not a gripe that nobody is to blame except Rosemary for this, because she usually solicits questions via Instagram. So, Rosemary, it's you that I have the gripe with. No, the problem is we tend to go, you know, we don't have enough information. So it's like, well, what if this and what if that? What are the mitigating circumstances of which we have no knowledge? So we tend to go down and try and give the best advice we possibly can, which I know is all one can ask for. But at the same time, I'm sure that if we had more facts, we could be more useful to the listener. I just don't want the letter writer or note writer sitting at home going, you got it wrong, fools. That's not what happened. This advice is useless. That's what I don't want this person to feel like.
I actually don't mind if that person feels like that, as long as they don't like say it anywhere publicly. If they're just like their fist in the air in their bedroom. But yes, email us notwithoutmysis@gmail.com with details of your problem. We will keep them 100% anonymous from everyone in our lives. We will never repeat your name out loud, but it'll just give us more context with which to answer your question. But anyway,
yeah, exactly.
For now, here are some contextless questions.
I should say also, you know, very often the questions that we pluck from our mailbag are often lighthearted, you know, easygoing. Today's questions are a little bit more maybe deep, you know, than I think we normally have tackled in the past. So just be aware as you're listening that some people might find this upsetting. Hopefully they won't. We intend to address it obviously in a very sensitive way, as you know us to be extremely sensitive souls.
My partner is giving me an absolute dog's life, constantly putting me down. Do you have any advice?
So you see what I mean? Like zero context, right? That's a hard one to answer. But I mean, I think that one liner sums it up. This makes me feel very sad for this letter writer.
Yeah, me too. And I suppose I think of it from the point of view, I was in a relationship, quite a short relationship, but also felt very intense to me at the time, where it started out with being put down, basically. Like before we'd even met, I remember this guy, I met him on an app. If you've read my book, This Is Not About You, you'll know all about this. But I met him on an app, and I remember one of the first things he said to me was, he recognized me from social media, and he said, God, people really, really hate you, don't they? Like, you know, people really hate you. And I think, you know, he basically was kind of saying to me, like, you need an online makeover, like you need to rehab your image. And, you know, I can really help you with that because people really think you're a dick, don't they? And he was kind of saying it like, I'm surprised because I thought you were a dick too, but actually I really like you. But like, people really don't like you, do they? And it was at a time when, to be honest, I really felt like people didn't like me. So it was perfect. I was ripe for the plucking in that sense. And when I read this person's one line question, I did think a lot of the time I feel like when we're in relationships, whether it's a friendship or a romantic relationship, where somebody really puts us down and we, for want of a better term, put up with it. Because we don't know how much this person is putting up with it or not. Like, we don't know if they're pushing back. But I feel like a lot of the time it's because you're in a really low place yourself. Like, you're in a place where your self-esteem is really low and you don't feel able to kind of push back or to just get rid of that person. Because the easiest solution, like the most straightforward solution, is literally like, get rid of that person. Like, you deserve better than to have someone in your life, someone who's always in your life, making you feel like shit. But again, we don't have any context in terms of marriage, children, situation.
So I think very often people would leave, but there are a lot of, extenuating circumstances around not just kids very often being like, how can I do this to my kids? How can I prioritize myself over my kids, even though you're not necessarily, like, if you take a step back, you're actually not prioritizing yourself over your kids, because you are showing your kids right now, you're modeling a very unhealthy relationship. If you have kids, you're modeling a very unhealthy relationship for them, right? Which is not beneficial for them in the long run. And it isn't fair for them to see you being treated badly. It isn't fair for you to have to model that for them, you know? But also, you're not responsible. I think the most important thing in all this is you're not responsible for somebody else's behavior. And I'm sure that in a relationship, it's not that you know, your situation is actually a little bit unusual, although it wasn't inherently nasty what he said to you. It was more a foreshadowing of what was to come. You know, it was more of a red flag that if you'd actually stopped to say, like, why are you telling me everybody hates me? Like, it's kind of a put down and then a lift up all at once. You know?
I think he was nagging me, basically. You know, when you read, I think in that book, The Game, I think it's called The Rules of the Game, which was a response to The Rules. And it's written by a man about how to pick up women. And one of the things was that you nag them. So you put a woman down and then immediately give them a compliment or something so that they then feel really grateful to you. And I definitely did feel grateful to him. I felt grateful that he could look past all of this negativity and that he could accept me, even though I had this terrible bad reputation, even though my personality was clearly a bit shit, you know, that I felt really as if he was doing me a favor. And I think that was by design. I think it was a real manipulative tactic.
Oh yeah, 100%. But I think what's also really telling there is his ability immediately to hone in on your insecurity. You know, that is a very, very, very well honed skill that like somebody who's very insecure of themselves and very, I would say kind of unstable often, that they have really developed this ability to hone in on other people's insecurities and to manipulate them with them. Because like, that's not something that, you know, a well-balanced individual does. They don't go out to say like, what's this person's weak spot? And let me A, recognize it, and then B, leverage it for my own benefit.
Yeah.
You know, that's not like the normal. Mostly you're so busy looking at people going, you know, your friends and whatever, you're like, this person's great and this person's great. And when they give you their own insecurity, you're usually relatively surprised by it. Oh, I would never have thought you had that, you know, opinion of yourself. So the fact that this person could immediately say, this must be your sore spot, you know, that is a red flag. But I think you're not responsible for what somebody else thinks of you. And that's very, very hard. Like, that's actually a mantra that I think everybody should repeat to themselves regularly. I'm not responsible for what you think of me. You know, doesn't mean it doesn't hurt my feelings. Doesn't mean that what you say to me about me, you know, behind my back doesn't hurt my feelings, but I'm still not responsible for it. And I think that's something that this letter reader needs to keep at the, like, keep top of mind going through this. Because the thing is, very often in these relationships, I think when somebody gives you a dog's life and talks to you really badly, you're so caught up in rebutting those arguments and dealing with the today they said this and this happened. Actually, none of it is relevant. All of it is an attempt to distract you from whether or not you're going to stay, whether or not you're going to leave. Like, all of it is, you're so caught up in today's argument that you can't think about the bigger picture of this pattern of negative behavior. Is this the life you want to have, etc.? But you're busy going, today they said this and I'm so upset. You have to get to a point where what they say to you, to the maximum extent possible, like, doesn't affect you, doesn't bring you to tears, doesn't upset you. Like, you can be upset, but you have to recognize that that's just a human reaction, but you're not affected by their opinion of you. And I think that's a really huge step when you're in a destructive relationship like this.
Yeah, but to that point, I would say a really good first step, if you're not already doing this, would be to start going to therapy, even if it's just a temporary thing that you maybe do four sessions over a month or four sessions over 2 months, to basically get to talk to somebody who's completely objective about the situation and explain to them what's going on. And just sometimes you need somebody objective to say to you what they're saying is because of X. Like, because a lot of the time I feel when somebody consistently puts you down, it's about them. It's not about you. It's something like they're unhappy with something, or they're angry, or they're jealous because you have this social life that they're jealous of, and they want to put you down and make you feel less capable of interacting with other people. Or I think often there's something like that going on. And not to say that I would excuse it at all, but that it's almost like once you get the perspective of what they're telling you is not a truth about yourself that you need to hear, then, because I think sometimes you get tied into, like, especially if you're in an intimate relationship with somebody, that you're like, oh, they're trying to help me. They're trying to improve me. They're trying to, you know, push me to be better. But actually, I don't think that's true. And once you realize actually what they're saying is nothing to do with me, I think that can often give you the distance you need to walk away. Because I'm assuming, right, that this person has spoken to their partner and has said, you know, it really upsets me when you talk to me like this, or that they've got upset and their partner can see them either crying or reacting badly or getting angry. And if none of that has changed how your partner speaks to you, I don't think anything is going to change it. And so ultimately, I think you need to walk away. Like, I think you need to leave this person, but it's figuring out how you feel strong enough to do that. And that's why I think speaking to somebody about it could really help.
You know, and in a lot of cases, I often look at people who are in difficult relationships or abusive, whether it's like mental abuse or, you know, verbal abuse, emotional abuse. I often look at these relationships, and I know it's really unfair because very often it's the individual who is being abused who ends up going to therapy first, because mm-hmm. you really want that person who is abusing, who is being unreasonable, etc. You want that person to go to therapy, and you're asking them to, etc., etc. And so often I've seen, I mean, I'm even thinking about one of my friends who had a relationship, like this was 20 years ago, and I was so annoyed. Like, it was clear this partner, boyfriend of hers was, you know, not a healthy person. He was not positive at all. And she was like a ray of sunshine, you know, and he was just bringing her down so badly and just creating such a kind of false narrative around her that she was totally being gaslit, basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was isolating her from her friends, etc. And she ended up going to therapy, and I was so indignant on her behalf, like at the time going, why is she in therapy when he's the one with all the problems, you know? But I think that was a very simplistic way of looking at it. Because to your point, I think a therapist can help you identify, you know, a path forward, can help you develop coping skills, can help you also, like, huge part of it is extricating your own emotions from it, which is impossible to do. Like, it sounds impossible. It is possible. But it sounds so challenging because you're so caught in this whirlwind of, you know, ups and downs and drama, no drama. And I'm sure, like, generally these relationships aren't nonstop bad. There are, you know, these really nice days when you're like, oh, everything's fine now, or everything's calm. And but all the time you're kind of walking on eggshells. You know, you're never quite sure when the bad mood will emerge or whatever. So I do think, like, going to therapy is a really good first step. And I say that more to say, like, I've often thought, you know, in the past, I often thought, like, don't go because you're not the one who needs to go. And it's so unfair. And why should you go? And who has the time? Like, who has the time to go? It's between, you know, it's between work hours. But it really is important to figure out how to prioritize that. And even if you go every 2 weeks, even if you go every three weeks, once a month, like, start going and start having that space for yourself to just unpick and unknot some of this, you know, interwoven kind of unhealthiness.
Yeah. It's just really hard, and I really feel for this person. And ultimately, what I would remind them is, no matter how shit a person you are, and by shit, I don't mean like evil, right? I mean, if you are like incredibly boring and incredibly self-centered and you have no interest and you're not funny and you never make good jokes, you still deserve to be with somebody who makes you feel good about yourself. Do you know, you'll find someone else boring to be with. But you know what I mean? Like, as
oh my
in,
God.
No, but I mean, nobody deserves this, even if you are like the dullest, least interesting person. Like, you make crap jokes, or, you know, you don't ever make an effort with your friends. You buy crap presents, all these things that I would be like, that's not necessarily maybe somebody I would want to be friends with. You still deserve to be with somebody who loves you and makes you feel good.
I 100% agree with that. You know what else I would say, though? I mean, I was going to talk a bit about normalization, because I think that's one of the things that we do when we're in a negative relationship or an unhealthy relationship, is that we start to normalize things that, you know, if you kind of cast back over the history of this relationship, would you at the beginning of it have put up with the things that you put up with now or accept now? You know, that you probably have normalized a lot of really strange behavior that isn't okay, you know, and it's okay to acknowledge, okay, actually, I wouldn't have thought that was okay. And sometimes you need to take that step back and kind of go, this isn't acceptable behavior. And it's not your responsibility to fix it. It's not your responsibility to make the other person accept that it's not acceptable. It's your responsibility to decide what you're going to do about it. And that's really different too. Like, you may never reconcile viewpoints with this other individual. You're probably talking in circles about, like, I feel and you feel. And I think at the end of the day, what's relevant is, how do you feel and what are you going to do about it? And one of the other things that I think is really key is realizing that it's super daunting to think about ending a relationship. It's probably, you know,
it's so
if it's long term, if it's short term, if it's meaningful to you, it's really, really daunting. And you start playing out through your head, like you're saying, Rosemary, you know, kids, am I married? Often it's a very big financial concern. You know, what am I going to do with my house? What am I going to do? Like, where's the income going to come from? Like, how am I going to live on half what I live on now, etc. And what I would say is, don't think about it like that, because actually this will be a very long journey probably. Like, take it a day at a time, take it an event at a time. What am I doing first? Okay, how do I get through that? Okay, now that I'm through that, how am I going to get through this next part? And it will become much more manageable. But if you think about it as one huge event, and like, how am I going to get to the finish line? And what am I going to do when I'm at the finish line? Like, that's also not something you can control. And very unlikely that the finish line will even look like you're thinking it will now. It's probably going to be totally different by the time you get there.
Yeah, true. Okay, I hope that helps. And if it doesn't, and you have more details you'd like to share with us, notwithoutmysis@gmail.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Should I give up my corporate job to be a stay-at-home mom? I have 3 kids. I could do casual, part-time work in a different industry.
What do you think?
I think if you're asking, it probably means that you think you would like to. But what I would say from the 2 days a week that I spend at home with my one child is that it's very difficult and the days are very long. I find the days very long, and it's at this age as well, right? That if he was a little bit older, if he was in school, or if he was more, you know, we could do more things together rather than just like sitting on the ground playing trains, I might not find the days so long. But I think I personally would really struggle with being a stay-at-home mom, because I think I need interaction. I need to be feeling like I'm productive in a kind of a work sense. And I know that's also like capitalism, and maybe I shouldn't be so tied to the idea of productivity being a somehow an indicator of my value, but I am. So I think I would really struggle with being a stay-at-home mom. And I think sometimes it seems like we think it would be a great idea because we're paying so much in childcare and we're kind of quote unquote missing out these moments with our kids. But I think also it can be a lot more challenging than people think it could be. However, I would say that if this is something you're thinking about, could you look at taking a 1 year leave of absence from work and doing whatever casual part-time work in a different industry probably isn't going to be in competition with your current job? Could you look at doing it for a year and consider it a trial basis for yourself and see how you get on? Because also, if you're a stay-at-home mom, talking about doing casual part-time work can also be really difficult. Because if you're a stay-at-home mom, you often don't have the time that you think you're going to have. You know what I mean? You think you're going to have all this time to do all these things while you're at home, but actually you do have a full-time job still. It just happens to be parenting your children. But if you're in a corporate job that allows you the flexibility, I would say it would be a great idea to give it a go on a 1 year trial for yourself and see how it feels to you, see how you can make ends meet. I know though as well that it can be complicated with like taking your kids out of creche for a year and then can you get them a place again? But that's what I would say. Ideally, it would be great if you could try it for a year. What do you think?
I thought that was a good idea, trying it for a year. I mean, I would say I would love to be a stay-at-home mom. Like if finances permitted, and I don't mean like if I could stay in the luxury to which I've become accustomed. I mean, like if financially I could do it for a couple of years, I'd happily do it. I have no qualms anymore about like achieving this or achieving that. I don't feel like my job, you know, in any way defines me or what I contribute in that way. And I have to say, I stayed home this, I mean, I was home for the last, whatever, 14 months, obviously. And three of those months, the kids were all home during the summer. And I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed having them all home. I agree with you, maybe the baby age is a little bit more complicated. Also, because I was even just thinking about the baby seat yesterday, getting everybody into the baby seat is just a pain in the neck.
It's a pain in the arse,
like,
yeah.
Getting everybody in and out of the car, you know. But I actually, now that they're all five and up, it's grand, totally great fun. I did like a lot of jigsaws and painting and swimming and all that kind of, like, I really enjoyed it. I'd happily be a stay-at-home mom. I loved the cooking and the baking and the everything, getting school bags ready and meeting them for lunch in school. Like, I would happily do it for a couple of years, if not forever. I don't want this to now get super morbid, but recently I've just been thinking about, like, our great-grandparents and our great-great-grandparents. I know nothing about them. They're dead. They'll be forgotten. I'll be dead and forgotten. I might as well just do what I enjoy. I mean, I might as well be happy. If this makes me happy, if this makes you happy, if your job doesn't make you happy, and if being with your kids makes you happy, great, go for it.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting.
Was that a bit morbid? Sorry.
No, because I mean, I suppose I would have thought, knowing you and knowing how ambitious you are and how ambitious you have been and how hardworking, I would have thought that you would find it harder to transition from working full time and, like, being really, I mean, quote unquote successful, but successful by any metric, right? Like, you know, have got to a point in your industry where you are considered successful. I wouldn't have thought you would say that. But actually, it's interesting how our perspectives shift as well.
I honestly think, like, the last year has been very stressful for very many reasons, right? Not least of which has been looking for a job that has seemed like a tiny glimmer of impossibility in a big, massive, dirty looking haystack, right? And that has seemed really stressful. But I also think I needed this break. And, you know, that sounds very privileged, and it is. But, like, being in a senior position in a company that was, you know, like everybody else's company, but went through the pandemic, had layoffs, was constantly, you know, pivoting to make this, pivoting to make that, pivoting in every direction to survive the pandemic. Like, it was a lot. And I think I never worked as hard as I'm sure lots of people, you know, and I'm not even a healthcare worker. So, like, I don't want people getting annoyed with me, but it was a lot, and it was a lot of responsibility. Like, we want to keep people employed. We want to not do anything that would risk people's jobs. How are we going to talk about pay cuts? I was working literally every single day, every single night, taking phone calls, trying to get stuff delivered, trying to, you know, overcome shipping delays and shipping issues and, you know, factory shutdowns and all this kind of stuff. And I didn't realize, like, how much it impacted me and how much it changed my perspective of life and what's important, not just the work, but just the pandemic and everything, you know? And I also think maybe there is an aspect of, I have achieved lots of things, and I'm as happy now as I was when I didn't have those things, you know? But that's easy to say. If I didn't have them,
yeah, would you still be wishing you'd got to that point? Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I always thought I wanted to be CEO or president of a brand, and I would actually still like to be president of a brand, but I don't necessarily want to be CEO. I'm not super into, you know, the finance, like running the finance department, running the legal department. Like, that's not my passion. I feel I've kind of rediscovered my passion for product, for design, for being creative over the last 14 months. And so if I could do that in a way, stay home with the kids, like, what's life all about, as mom would say, as she always says when you're driving somewhere, you know, and you're like trying to not have a super in-depth conversation with the woman who rarely emotes.
Sorry.
What's life all about?
You have never been driving somewhere and trying not to have a super in-depth conversation.
I absolutely have.
You
mom.
Love having, oh, I'm sure mom's always saying, oh, your sister loves to have in-depth conversations while she's driving.
That's now that I'm an adult.
The this two of you basically always say the same thing about each other. You just don't like each other's in-depth conversation. You want her to be talking about one thing and she wants to be talking about the meaning of life.
We'd be driving along in the car and she'd suddenly go, do you ever look around and think you see granny and grandpa in a crowd? And I'm like, what? Sometimes I think I see them on the Lewis or at the bus stop. And then I'm like, feel these, you know, salty brimmings of tears. And I'm trying to drive at the same time, you know. What's it all about? That's what I wonder. What's life all about? So what is it all about? So do what makes you happy, because that's what it's all about. I mean, again, a privileged stance, but like, if you can afford to.
Yeah.
If you can make it work and not, you know, totally decrease the quality of life for your kids, more even than for yourself, because you can make those choices, but like, you can't really foist them upon your kids, you know, can you do it in a way that makes it work and be happy and not be overly stressed? Because I do think people underestimate, like, it's a full-time job. Mm,
yeah.
You know, yes, they might be at school, but then I presume you're cleaning the house, you're prepping all the clothes, you're making food, you're doing the shopping. Like, it's a full-time job. And I know other people are going to say, I do that full-time job at the weekend, but it is different. You know, you're doing things differently and there is a higher expectation.
Yeah.
If you're staying
at home. It's true. It's
true.
Okay. Last question. I thought we'd get through about six, but now this is the third question. This is the last one. I have two kids, aged 2.5 and 6 months. I've no desire to have sex with my husband. I love him, but I'm so tired and touched out. I've only had sex once since our second baby arrived. Let me answer this as somebody who has a two-year-old. I was going to say, has had a baby recently. I have a two-year-old. I had a baby 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago. I think that is totally normal. I think in the first 6 months after Atlas is born, did we have sex once? Maybe. I think that's...
I'm sorry, what age is this second baby?
6 months old.
Oh, totally normal.
Yeah, I think a lot of the time we get kind of sold the lie, you know, that is like, just don't have sex for the next 2 weeks. And in a way you assume or you think that therefore people are having sex then after the 2 week mark. I think actually far fewer people are having sex within the first 3 months than we think are. And even within the next 6 months, I think it's totally fine. It's totally normal. I think if I was writing an agony aunt column in a magazine, I would say, for this time that you're feeling very touched out, your body might be feeling very different to you. Physical intimacy might be the last thing on your mind. Try to find different ways that you can connect. So whether that is spending a bit more time together in the evening, watching something that you both want to watch, or even if you can ask a family member to come over some weekend afternoon so that you can go for lunch, just the two of you, and gaze at each other over the table of a restaurant without a screaming baby somewhere. Like, those kind of things I think are important.
Well, I would also say, I think very often, and usually it's women, but I'm sure it's men as well, I think very often it's like, I'm postpartum. I'm, you know, really emotional because my hormones are all over the place. I'm exhausted because probably I'm doing the majority of the feeds. Now, you may not be, you know, I'm up half the night. And my partner is expecting sex from me, despite not necessarily weighing in and like making the space for me to feel like in the mood to have sex. Because I do think, I agree with you, right? I think really at 6 months, like, you don't know whether you're coming or you're going. At the same time, if you think it's a problem, maybe it is, right? I don't want to totally dismiss this out of hand. You're grand. It's not a problem. Like, maybe it is. And if you're feeling like it's a problem, then clearly it's a problem for you, right? Like, this, you're feeling bad about it. You're feeling worried about it. But like, I read something recently that said, like, is your partner, you know, giving you time to relax at night? You're feeling touched out. Is this partner that you're feeling obliged to have sex with? Or maybe they're not putting you under a pressure and the pressure is entirely internal. But like, are they picking up some of the slack too? Because are they feeling totally touched out? Because if they're not, then maybe they should be. You know, there should be a little bit more, you get a break, you can have read a book, you can have a bath, and you might feel a little bit more like your, you know, quote unquote, normal self, and a little bit more attracted to them. Because it's not super attractive when you feel like you're picking up all the slack, minding the kids, doing everything, like you said, touched out, potentially, you know, doing a lot of stuff around the house. And then your partner's not necessarily weighing in the way you want them to. That actually, it's totally normal not to find that attractive. Like, having sex with somebody also implies that you find them attractive. And in that moment, you may just be enraged by them. That is not a great formula for sexual desire. You know, so I think there also has to be a, like, are we creating the right environment and have we set the right expectations for both of our contribution to this household so that I can feel attracted to you? Because, like, it's not just, you know, a right. You come home, you do nothing. I'm wrecked. I'm exhausted. I feel like I'm doing all the heavy lifting, whether I am or not. I'm not going to find that attractive. And I think the concern is that unless you fix it now, you're not going to find that attractive go forward. And then you're creating a problem further down the road. So if this is something, could be totally, again, don't have all the facts. This is a lot of supposition and assumptions on my part. But I think that's often an issue. So the other thing I would say, though, is a friend of mine did have this issue. And after about 2 years, she went to the doctor. And the doctor, her gynecologist, is a part of an alliance or an associate. They talk a lot in their business about how they're all, they do a lot of like sexual relationship training, and they go to seminars, and they're very versed in, you know, being in touch with your sexuality. And so, and if you have any problems, ask them. So she went and she was like, I just don't feel attracted to my husband. Like, can you help me? I just never feel sexual desire, etc. And they were like, oh, well, you know, maybe get some more sleep. So like, the thing is, I do think this is a hard one to address, because I don't know anybody who's ever gone and gotten great help for it.
Yeah.
And like, I think that there are, you know, hormonal imbalances and stuff. But I think you really have to be a good advocate for yourself to get that treatment if you feel. Because like if you're looking at your partner, I don't know if this is a husband, I keep saying husband. If you're looking at your partner and you're like, I like you, you're doing all the right things, I just do not feel sexual desire towards you, then I think you should go and talk to your doctor and explain that. And like he or she may say, you know, take some more time, whatever. But I would continue to advocate for yourself because nobody's going to come to you with a great handy solution.
Yeah, I agree. I actually think the kind of emotional labor of having two small kids at home cannot be underestimated, and the physical labor. And to Beatrice's point, if at the end of the day you're feeling like, okay, this person has done their 8 hours work in the office today, but I've done 16 hours between like minding these two babies and getting up during the night and feeding them and XYZ, if your partner was working 16 hour days, they probably wouldn't be in the mood for sex either. So can you get to a point where you're each doing 12 hours work a day, basically, and make it a little bit more equitable? And then you also might find that your sex drives line up a bit more, because if your partner's a bit more wrecked, they probably won't be wanting to have sex as much. And if you're a bit less wrecked, you might be wanting to have sex a little bit more often, and maybe then you can meet in the middle. But it is really hard. And those, like, also I'm assuming, I don't know, but like the majority of our listeners are in Ireland. So I'm assuming that this person is in Ireland. And if they are, at 6 months, they're on maternity leave. So they're home full time with the 2.5-year-old and the 6-month-old. Yeah, and that's really, really exhausting. Like a 2.5-year-old is no joke. And add a 6-month-old, I can only imagine.
So if I do think, though, if any of our listeners are experts in sexual wellness and sexual health and postpartum sexual health, like please feel free to write to us or to share any resources that you're aware of, because I do think this is an all too common issue and problem for women and probably for men. And just if you have any recommendations on where people can go or what they could tap into to get help here, that would be really helpful.
Yeah, please email us notwithoutmysis@gmail.com and we'll share on the pod and we'll also share on Instagram and put links up on our Patreon, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, we would really appreciate that, because obviously we're really smart, wise women, but we're not experts on this in particular. Thank you all so much for listening to Not Without My Sister. You can get us on Instagram at Not Without My Sister, patreon.com/notwithoutmysister, and email us notwithoutmysis@gmail.com. And if you have any problems at any stage of your life that you think we could help with, please send them to us entirely anonymously. We will never share your details, name, age, date of birth, mother's maiden name, etc. with anyone. We'll just use it to empty your bank. No, we won't. We won't. We won't share it.
We can also paraphrase your question if you would prefer. So we don't have to quote you directly. We can also rephrase. Rosemary's excellent at that. Rosemary, I thought you were saying you were wise, wonderful women. I was delighted. And then it like...
Well, we are wise, wonderful women. We're just not experts. Wise, wonderful novices. Oh, yeah. Not experts in everything. Experts in some things.
Yeah.
I'm great at reversing into car parking spaces, for example. It's my one claim to fame.
Yeah, you made a great chocolate cake yesterday as well.
Oh, yeah, I did. I'm practically a chef now, unlike you, opening up your Aldi pizza for shame.
Yeah, I don't know if I took a picture of that cake. I should have, so I could post it. It was delicious.
Oh,
Roseanne's recipe.
Oh, it wasn't Roseanne. Goodbye. Wasn't Roseanne's recipe. She uses cocoa. I use drinking chocolate.
Oh, it was very nice. It was very gooey. It was good.
Yeah, I was trying to make it gooey. Thank you all so much for listening to Not Without My Sister. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.